Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Monday, the 15th of March, recording at 5:16 p.m. British Standard Time. Now, first, I said on the website that I would talk about the implications for markets of Al-Qaeda involvement in the Madrid bombings. Now, I did touch on this, I think it was on Friday, when I wasn't quite sure who was responsible for the bombings, but it was beginning to look a little bit more like Al-Qaeda. I don't need to cover the election result because that's obviously been a factor, and there are implications to that, but I won't go into those at this stage. I'll just stick to the markets here. My comment was that if it was ETA, that was certainly a major problem for Spain and therefore the Spanish market, but that it would not have international implications. However, if it proved to be Al-Qaeda, as it has, then that would have much wider implications for other markets, and we've already seen that. We've seen the nervousness that's taken place in some of these stock markets. Now, we had a bravado rally on Wall Street on Friday, but that's been retraced, or a lot of it's being retraced in here today, and I'll cover that action shortly. But most of the markets are a bit subdued in here right now. Now, how much of an ongoing effect would this actually have on sentiment? If it proves to be a one-off, and in other words, as we all hope, we don't get a repeat event somewhere else, then I think that markets are gradually becoming used to this sort of thing, and some markets are quite used to this sort of thing, and investors' nerves will recover fairly quickly. I think it'll have less of a psychological impact in Asia, more of a psychological impact, obviously, in the European area, and also in the United States, possibly also in the UK and the European area. Now, in terms of specific markets, how might this actually work out? The immediate reaction is to say that any worries over terrorism is a negative for stock markets, and because people will become more cautious, and they may well, if they worry about traveling less, or if we get any kind of slowdown in economic activity, markets would discount that very, very quickly indeed. And conversely, bond markets would be steadier because any effect of Al-Qaeda would be deflationary overall, and so that would tend to steady bond prices generally, and it certainly would deter central banks from raising interest rates any further where interest rates have actually been raised. In terms of implications for currencies, that's a tougher call, partly because it's not really the mass public that is moving these currency markets. It's really a smaller but very well-heeled band of currency speculators, plus plenty of government activity in this area, as you know. So I'm a don't know on that subject at this stage, and I think probably pretty much everybody else is as well, so that it might just lead to further ranging activity. That's certainly the way uncertainty tends to be translate itself into market action. What about commodity markets? I think that it would have a firming influence on precious metals if it had any influence whatsoever. It could well be, that could also be the case for industrial metals, unless people felt that there was going to be quite a significant slowdown overall. But I think that's a small risk, and I'm talking about economic slowdown, of course, but I think that's probably quite a small risk because the big story behind the powerful move in metals, you've heard me say, is China. And you've heard me say many times before that metals are always going to get a very good recovery whenever there's a cyclical, or beg your pardon, whenever the global economy is synchronized in an economic recovery, as is certainly the case today. Now, it's a modest overall recovery, but that even, judging from past cycles, even that would produce quite a reasonable bounce, quite a good bull market, maybe only a medium-term bull market in metal prices. But the voracious demand for metals coming from China certainly changes the equation. And then, of course, the starting point was what I've described previously as metal prices at historic lows in real terms, if not always nominal terms, and it was also in nominal terms in some instances, record lows in terms of modern history, our lifetime. Now, so that's pretty much the way I see it as far as the Al-Qaeda influence. It's definitely a negative bottom line, definitely a negative for stock markets, and a steadying factor for bond markets. Now, stock markets were already in a corrective phase, and I did also mention that the bombings the influence, immediate influence, was to actually hasten that correction overall, and that's still the case. But it's just another factor here that is concerning investors right now. Okay, now let me move on to trades here. And I think I'm going to move right into the BCA story, and then I'll pick them up as I go through. In terms of how low can Treasury yields go, well, that obviously depends. The short answer to that is it obviously depends on what actually happens with the U.S. economy. And some people are quite pessimistic and feel that the U.S. economy is going to slide into a recession next year. That remains a possibility, although either administration will try hard to actually avoid that. But certainly the U.S. economy is vulnerable for a number of reasons that have been discussed here before and that have been covered in detail in some of the reports that I've posted, so I don't need to go into all that. In terms of the technical action, we've seen quite a significant retracement. It's over the rise in yields that occurred from the June low, and that suggests that this is a lengthy base building process. Overall, I've described it as V-bottom in terms of the yields with lengthy right-hand extension type of bottoming out formation, and I think that's still the case. But you can, with these patterns, you can get an entire retracement and even a little bit beyond. That would surprise me overall, but I'm certainly budgeting for quite a lengthy bottoming out process in those yields. In other words, topping out for the long bond futures. Now, what about the Chinese economy cresting or heading south? Well, I've got a copy on the website on that, and my own view on this, and I'm by no means an expert in China. I'm very much guided by what I see elsewhere and hopefully a little bit of common sense. But I've, of course, when you read extensively, as I try to do, you get a wide range of opinions, and I back what seems to make the most sense in terms of what I can also fathom myself. And certainly China is a little bit concerned about the overheating in the building sector, but I have described it, what we're seeing from the Chinese government, as a light tug on the reins rather than any sort of major attempt to slow the economy. And the main reason for that is because of all the unemployment that exists and the funds that they actually need to boost the rural agricultural areas. Also, they don't have any kind of serious inflation problem at this stage. I think they've sown the seeds for another inflationary cycle, as I've said, generally around the world, but certainly that's not a problem right now, and I don't think that China is going to be preemptive in terms of taking a move against, probable inflation pressures in the future, just the way the Federal Reserve is obviously not going to be preemptive in taking or in changing monetary policy too soon to head off what they might feel is incipient inflationary pressures. So my feeling is that you get a little bit of a slowdown in the Chinese economy. Perhaps it comes down a point or two from that very high growth rate, which is up around 9%, but not much more. Now, I was fascinated by this more JGB weakness ahead. Those JGBs are Japanese government bonds, of course, in one of the BCA's forecasts. I've certainly been feeling that. You know, I've got too early my own my description, of course, short positions in U.S. Treasuries and the JGBs, and they're both under the water a little bit. But I'm more underwater in the U.S. position, partly because the JGBs, and the JGBs are the better bet in my view overall of the two. It would have been smarter just to concentrate entirely in that. For one thing, the yields are so low that it costs almost nothing to short JGBs. And because the yields are so low, the chances of them moving a whole lot lower, regardless of what happens to the Japanese economy, are pretty remote. Do you remember back in June when a member of the, I think it was at the Bank of Japan, I believe, had said the JGB yields were ridiculous? Well, we're not going to be hearing that from Ben Bernanke or Alan Greenspan, are we? So shorting the U.S. Treasuries is the more risky play than shorting the JGBs. And I have today actually doubled up my position in the JGBs, in the JGB shorts, in futures. This is shorting the June contract. Now, this is still a small stake, and I think it's early still, but you've heard me say before, I wanted to be in here a little bit early. If I look at the charts and I say, is this a screaming sell right in here, right now? No, but I do take background that BCA provides, and I don't think of BCA so much as timers. I hope that doesn't sound rude. I'm a great respecter and admirer of their research, but I think they're looking less at the day-to-day technical activity and taking a much broader perspective, and I find that really extremely useful. And therefore, I've been easing into this bond market, the long-dated bond market, in terms of short positions. I've described it before as too early, much the way I went in and started to buy the palladium too early and bought it right down well into the lows because I felt that palladium was so depressed that it really had commenced an overall bottoming out process. And fortunately, that turned out to be the case. And I'd be even more surprised if we didn't see this lengthy topping out process in the long bond sector eventually lead to higher yields and, of course, lower prices for the futures contracts. But that could take a very long time. In other words, we could extend this this ranging period easily for a couple of years. I hope not, and I'm not predicting that, but I have to be prepared for that possible eventuality. Now, what about the housing, UK housing issue? And I'm always a little loath to comment on this because first it alarms people, and they're especially where the house is their primary investment. But I was fascinated that BCA had taken such a bearish stance. Now, it was subscriber Ian Arstall who had supplied that report, and he also wrote an excellent comment that will go into the subscribers forum that we're just in the process of completing prior to launch, completing in terms of the overall design of it and so on. But here's what Ian had said about this. He said, the mania forecast for future levels of UK property is probably alarmist, but it is giving another perspective based on outcomes of other bubbles, although the comparison can only be taken so far as the underlying comparison is with speculative markets. Having said that, And here's the crunch bit. Having said that, I think that the interesting statistic I saw elsewhere, and so in other words, not in the BCA report, is the impending crossover of the buy-to-let new mortgage holder about to overtake the first-time buyer. In other words, we're getting more buy-to-let mortgage holders, or about to get more buy-to-let mortgage holders than first-time buyers. And Ian says, now, that might be called speculative, and there would be more supply from the former than the latter. I couldn't agree more, and that crossover, or pending crossover, certainly rings a few bells for me. I would not be wanting, or I would not be wishing to go into the buy-to-let market for not only economic reasons, well, for a whole variety of reasons that I don't need to go into now. I think you get the point on that. And lastly, on the BCA comment, U.S. unemployment prospects turning up. Well, I would have phrased that U.S. employment prospects turning up. They're looking for more jobs creation. Certainly, the Bush administration is focused on jobs creation. But the problem, as I've mentioned before so many times, is that transfer of jobs from services industries is only in its infancy. Services are a much bigger portion of the U.S. economy. Therefore, it is going to continue for really quite a long time. So while the U.S. does not have high unemployment at this stage, it is being made much more of a political issue during an election year than would otherwise be the case, it is nevertheless a worry for the administration and a bit of a worry for the U.S. economy. So I would expect modestly improved employment figures, not dramatically improved employment figures, over the remainder of this year. And I hope to be too pessimistic in that, because it'd be wonderful if they succeed in increasing jobs at a faster rate. Now, in the UK, the unemployment is very low, but that's occurred largely due to government spending. And I don't think those jobs are as productive. They're however useful they may or may not be. I don't think they're as productive for the UK economy. And if the US goes the route of public spending, the same would be the case there. Also, I think we need to look at wages, income per hour. These figures are really quite low for the US economy overall. So I don't think we're going to have any shortage of labor, to put it mildly, or any overheating in terms of wage costs in the U.S. for really quite some time. And that'll be an important factor in helping to keep those inflationary pressures at bay for longer than might otherwise be the case. Okay, where are we in markets here today? First, as far as the stock market scene was concerned, we did have that reasonable bounce in Japan, putting the Nikkei up 1.39%, up 155 points. It was the second section that interested me the most. I think that it was its 13th straight day of a gain, and it has started to accelerate a bit. So it's a very, very strong strong rise there. I think I mentioned on Friday that I was tempted to go in and buy. I almost did, but I'm taking a little bit, well, my JGB trades aside, I'm taking a little bit of a rest here from trading. I'm resisting things that I would otherwise do, partly because I think that markets are more turbulent than was otherwise the case. I certainly have far more questions than answers about markets right now, so I feel that the risk factor has gone up rather considerably, and I don't feel that I can do as well. And also, I've been rather preoccupied with other factors, and mainly the launch of this new website and some of the features that are being incorporated with the website. And so it hasn't been a normal period in terms of my actual focus on items such as personal trading, which comes last. I'm going to do the research first, and I want to do the most professional job I can in maintaining the service. And the trading is something that helps me to concentrate the mind and pay the bills. Now, Let me continue my review through. I was going to mention something else, but to continue my review of the stock markets, we saw Europe open soft in here today, particularly Spain, following that election result. And then Europe cut those gains, and the UK market, I think at one stage, was almost unchanged. But Wall Street then came in a bit soft and has continued to decline. And again, I think that the second thoughts and the processing of the Al-Qaeda bombings in Madrid and the concern about additional terrorist activities coming on top of the earlier factors, the market being overextended on the upside, markets being overextended on the upside, some loss of form, Warren Buffett's comments, and so on. And this has tipped the balance very much towards the negative. So Europe has closed where it's closed, pretty well near the lows, and the UK moving from unchanged a couple of hours ago to down 54 points or 1.22%, and Spain is down a whopping 4.15%, and there are a number of declines of over 2% here. And those include Italy, Amsterdam, the CAC and DAX market. So it's pretty decent sell-off is continuing in here. There's no evidence, put it this way, there is no evidence at this stage that it's over. In terms of Wall Street right now, the Dow is down 118 points, the S&P's down 14, and the Nasdaq Composite is down 35. And so that Nasdaq Composite is staying below that psychological 2000 level, and I think that's important. So the technical deterioration that has been evident really for a while is being reinforced in here, and markets clearly remain vulnerable to a little bit more of a sell-off. I'm trying to do as little as possible in here in these stock markets, but had I done anything, the smarter move, as I've said before, would be to be on the short side of all this. I still feel that this reaction that we're seeing is more likely than not to be just a bigger correction than we had seen at any time during the last year, rather than the beginning of a sustained fall. But that's a guess. I'm going to cough, so I'm going to take the headsets off for a second. Sorry, tickly throat. In terms of the other markets, against that background, bond prices are steady but not dramatic. We're up 7 ticks in the US Treasury bond, 12 in the gilts, 23 in the euro bund. So not as strong action as we might have expected, or people might have expected against that background of weak stock markets. So that does suggest that the BCA type of view that we've seen the best part of these rallies in here, well, it's certainly being reflected by bonds in here today. There's not a great deal of enthusiasm for buying there. So what is really moving? Not much in currencies. Euro dollars barely changed in here, 122.31 right now. The currencies are pretty quiet overall. Now, I noticed that the yen slipped a little bit against the, I beg your pardon, the dollar slipped a little bit against the yen here, one down to 110.44. So that somewhat firmer yen won't do Japan any favors, certainly if it continues. It hasn't slipped enough here to really cause a worry as far as some of the short-term trades are concerned, and Japan, as you know, has been pretty much flavor of the month over the last month. Metals, these are doing quite well in here, and I've been fighting my inclination to go back in, go piling back into, well, first it would have been tin, and then also zinc. Those look very promising to me on the charts, particularly the tin, and that is up in here again today. Not overwhelmingly so, but it's up $30. That had hit a number of new highs last week. Why am I holding off? Well, partly because I'm taking a bit of a breather from my normal pace of trading activity in line with the choppier conditions that we're seeing in currencies and good many other markets. But also, I've mentioned this factor of commonality in metals. I like markets most when they have commonality. In other words, the trends are all moving in the same direction. And really, nickel today has been a bit of an eyebrow raiser. I think nickel had topped a few months ago up near 18,000, and at the moment it's at 12,700. This is one of the big shortages. Nickel had led the run on the upside. It's of course crucially important in the production of steel, and so it's down $200 in here today, which is not a big percentage move, and it's at 12,700, but it has been down as low as 12,150 in here earlier today. And when I saw that, I just thought, well, no need for me to be worrying too much about going into the tin. It's more risky, despite the very, very good-looking chart, orderly chart that it's showing. This nickel is a warning sign for me. That said, though, down around the 12,000 level, there is some chart support down there, and it is a very significant correction overall for nickel. When nickel does start to turn around, and if I'm able to see that before it runs away too much on the upside, it'll certainly be a candidate that may well interest me. But I'm in no hurry to do that in here today. Now, what about other positions? The palladium, that's my big metals speculation still. Now, I did take one baby step lightning on Friday when one of my sell-on strength targets was reached. It's currently at 281 in here. That's up 245 today. It has been as high as 287. And as I say, palladium has completed that first step above the base in my view, and it's showing very good relative strength in the metals sector overall. They're all steady in here today. Gold is up 330 as I speak. That's at 398.55. Gold has been very much the laggard. Silver steady at 714.5. I would be delighted if silver pulled back a little bit more. I'd like a buying opportunity, and my preferred buying opportunities with silver have always been to pick it up after a shakeout. But of course, that was during the base formation and during the creation of the first step above the base, and I suspect that we're now very much in the trending phase for a while, and therefore I'll have fewer opportunities to pick silver up on significant shakeouts. That's my hunch, at any rate, at this stage. And I'm not interested in chasing it. Now, a little bit of luck for David, or perhaps a big bit of luck. I feel a bit embarrassed to mention this, but I'll tell you exactly what my portfolio positions are. Remember, I told you I thought that my stop profit in the soybeans had been hit early last week. Certainly, the price did fall down to and a little bit below my stop point. It was just in the money stop. So when I saw that hit, I thought, oh, that's disappointing. It was volatile. It was but the stop was high enough so that I didn't lose any money on that trade had it been hit, and it would have actually made a little bit of money. Well, the reports came in, the weekly summary reports came in this morning, my spread bet position, and I noticed that the soybeans were still there, so I checked with them on this, and so that stop hadn't been acted upon, and therefore I'm still long the soybeans, the May soybeans, and they're doing extremely well today. They're up another 21 ticks here. It's up at 977, and this is the highest level that soybeans have been in 15 months. Well, first, I've still got the position, so that's fortuitous. I don't feel that I deserve the gain, so I've already decided that if I succeed, I'm going to let this, I'm going to hold on to this for a while longer here. But if I am able to take anything like this profit, or whatever the profit I take out of this, it's going straight into one of my favored charities, and I'll just play it accordingly. But it still looks good on the charts, pushing up to new highs in here today. And then the corn, which I've held all along, it's less volatile than the soybeans, still looks good on the chart, up 30, it's currently at 305 and a quarter on May corn. That's up 4 cents in here today. So pretty steady action in this sector overall, but it's such a weather punt, these two, and I deal with them entirely on the basis of charts, because every time I go and pick up the news stories, you see what you want to see in those news stories, and thus my being guided entirely on a technical basis. So in terms of both of those, I'll persist with a trailing stop type of formula, and if I get any further follow through, certainly on either of these in here over the next few days, I'll be, in other words, if they break well clear of these recent trading ranges, then I'll be raising my stops accordingly. And what else can I mention to you? Oil prices, these are pushing up again, up a dollar in here, 37.20 on the spot crude NYME. And I do feel that oil is building up for an upside breakout. Now, that will not be good for global growth, and it will not be good for global stock market. So if oil were to do that in the short term, and there is a lot of prior resistance up at this level, so it could easily sort of back and fill near current levels, but the underlying support on the chart and the way it has just been edging steadily higher, ranging steadily higher, I should say, in recent months, suggests that we will eventually get an upside breakout. And that, as I say, will, I think, concern equity investors additionally. So more factors to suggest that this stock market reaction is going to continue for a little while longer, although I'll put myself in the camp of Chris Roberts of CLSA, who sees a correction now, which we're getting. But it's not the big one, it's just bigger than anything we've seen previously, and then we get markets moving higher, although he's more optimistic about that next upward leg than I am. Have a good evening.